If you don't know, I'm a slut for dip. I like dipping shit, dipping crackers and shit. I like dipping chips and shit. Like, I like dip. I like drizzling dip on top of stuff. Like, I really fucks with dip. So this is some skinny enchilada dip. I'm not too keen on the fact that it's skinny because, But anyway, this is what's in it. I'm gonna tell you what's in it, and then I'm gonna tell you how to prep it and cook it. So first, you get a pound of boneless, skinless chicken breast, cooked and shredded. I'm trying to think of a way to make it easier because cooked chicken breasts, them hoes be thick and they can get super dry. So I suggest you fillet that hoe in half. Then you're gonna get 8 ounces of reduced fat cream cheese. I want to say that's a whole block of cream cheese. Yeah, it is. A cup of non-fat plain Greek yogurt, which I guess they're subbing sour cream for Greek yogurt because it's healthier for you. But I really like sour cream, so. Ooh, almost threw up. Sorry. A tablespoon of ground chili powder, a teaspoon of ground cumin, half teaspoon of garlic powder, half teaspoon of salt, kosher, 1 10-ounce can of old El Paso red enchilada sauce, which I'm not a huge fan of, but I mean, you don't have to use it if you don't want to. Yeah, I mean, if you like enchilada sauce, then you feel free, but if you don't, feel free to leave it out too. 1 can of black beans rinsed and drained because ew, if you don't rinse them and drain them, it's gonna have that thick black shit in there that smells like ham. So please rinse and drain your beans if you're using them from a can. 1 can of diced tomatoes with green chilies, drain the juice out. 1 can of Mexicorn or just regular corn if you don't like Mexicorn. A cup of freshly grated cheese. It says reduced fat, sharp cheddar, but like I said, you use what you want. And then tortilla chips, Ritz crackers, like whatever you want to use to dip it in. You preheat your oven to 400. You get you a glass or a metal baking pan, and you're gonna lightly spray it with cooking spray. Shred your chicken up after you let it cook, because you cook it before it goes in, so shred it up. You take a large bowl and your mixer. You beat together your cream cheese, your Greek yogurt, chili powder, cumin, garlic powder, and salt. All your seasonings, all your extra ingredients, minus the vegetables, until it's really well combined. And then you're gonna lower the speed a little bit, and then pour the enchilada sauce in until it's, everything's mixed equally. Then you're gonna take like a little spatula, put your beans, your tomatoes, your corn, your cheese, and your chicken, and mix it all together. Then you're gonna put that mix in your baking dish that's lightly coated with cooking oil, and put some more cheese on top. I don't like to follow the recipe for how much cheese to put because I think your heart tells you when to stop putting the cheese on there. So I probably would put a whole nother bag on top, bake it for about 20 minutes until the cheese is like crispy and bubbly. And then you're gonna serve that shit with some tortilla chips. You either make your own tortilla chips, store-bought Ritz crackers, pita chips, however you want to eat your dip, whatever your heart desires, that is how you eat your dip. And I know it's so good. Like, literally, my mouth is watering thinking about it because I told you I'm like a crackhead for dip. It's like drugs to me. But yeah, go cook that up, and I'll be right here waiting for you. And then you can eat and listen to your crime story because remember, the recipes that we talk about on this show pair best with a side of crime. Okay, I'm gonna get into the episode for this week. There's so much fucking noise in this house and outside. I'm in my mom's closet. Coming to you live from my mom's closet. Okay, this week's episode is the Freeman Bible disappearances. And if you haven't heard about this case, it's crazy. Okay, so we've all been spoon-fed that lie that your teenage years are the best years of your lives and you should cherish high school because it's the best time of your life and blah, blah, blah. It's lies. For Ashley Freeman and Lori, a Bible that couldn't have been further from the truth. Ashley and Lori were best friends. Ashley was a basketball player and Lori was a cheerleader. The girls had been close friends since kindergarten, and they were both 16 at the time. The girls called each other frequently. They talked like minimum one time a week, but I'm sure they did talk more than that. They were always on the same wavelength and thinking the same thoughts. Loria's mother told Unsolved Mysteries that they were the kind of friends who would finish each other's sentences. Ashley turned 16 in December of 1999. In celebration of that day, Loria asked her mother if she and Ashley could have a sleepover at their house. Her mother said yes. Loria went and asked her father if she had permission to spend the night at Ashley's house. He told her, yes, it's fine, you have permission to go under the condition that you be home by noon tomorrow. So noon the next day came, and Loria's dad was not greeted by her the way he thought he would be. Instead, at 5:30 a.m. that morning on December 30th, firefighters were rushing to the Freeman home. Someone passing by called and said that the trailer was up in flames. It seems very random to me that somebody's just passing by at 5:30 a.m. They're like, hey, this trailer's on fire. Like, anyway, police went, put out the fire. The fire was investigated, and it was determined that it was arson. It wasn't an electrical fire. It wasn't an accident. Somebody did this on purpose. So Kathy Freeman's body was found inside the blaze. She was on the side of her and her husband's waterbed, and the back of her head had been blown off with a shotgun. Ashley, Loria, and Ashley's dad weren't found, though. So they had an original theory that Danny Freeman kidnapped the girls and set the house on fire. And then a later finding debunked that theory. So after the fire, the Bible parents were walking through the crime scene searching for something that could tell them where their daughter was. Because, of course, they were desperate. When there's nobody, you're hoping that they're still alive. So, they noticed poor Danny Freeman's Rottweiler sitting next to a pile of debris, just not moving. So, upon further investigation, they found out that the debris was Danny's charred remains, and he had also been shot. But the two girls' bodies were not found. They were still missing. So, days after the girls went missing, there were no clues as to where they could be. They dragged a nearby lake, they searched caves, they searched a water-filled quarry, and all these searches came up nothing. They were coming up blank, no clues, no tips, no anything. So of course, as these cases tend to do, as the years went on, the leads went cold, they followed tons and tons of tips. They ended up being hoaxes or false sightings or just people blatantly lying. There were two different convicted killers who confessed to these crimes, but ended up recanting their confessions. One of the men was named Jeremy Jones. He claimed that he set the trailer on fire as a favor to a friend behind a drug debt. Then took the girls to Kansas, shot them, and threw their bodies in abandoned mines. A search of those mines in question proved that this was a lie. He only confessed to the story being a lie so that he could get better food and more phone privileges in prison. Very scummy. The girls were featured on multiple national TV shows like Unsolved Mysteries, as I mentioned earlier, and Vanished with Beth Holloway, I want to say is her name. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children released age-progressed pictures of the girls. The Bibles refused to take down their Christmas tree after their daughter went missing. They were really holding out hope that Loria would come home and they would be able to take down all their Christmas decorations together. And the tree did stay up until 2006, and it only came down then because it fell apart, which is so, so sad. Recent court documents shed suspicion on meth cookers and users in the area. Between couch surfing, periods of time in jail, and wildly violent relationships, they were shady characters and left no doubt about what had happened to the girls. Now, everyone in that particular group had seen the Polaroids, and you're gonna know what I'm talking about in a minute. But Philip Welch was a Bible hymn singing meth cooker, which is a hell of a combination. People knew him and described him as evil. He would break into fits of preaching, which, I mean, don't get more evil than that. There was another person named Pennington who was also a kingpin in the area, a little meth kingpin. Both had previous criminal records before the girls went missing in 1999. Prosecutors alleged that Welch Busick, who was another person who was suspected of having to do something with this crime, and Pennington went to the Freeman house to settle a bad drug deal. So, one way or another, it does seem to be a drug-related hit, murder, whatever you want to call it. Alleged witnesses told police that after the men killed the couple, they took the girls so that they could quote-unquote have some fun with them. A different witness told police that the girls were held for a matter of days at Welch's trailer and were raped and violently strangled. According to witnesses, if the girls wouldn't have tried to run, they would possibly still be alive. The police theorized that the girls' bodies were thrown into pits or possibly a cellar that was later covered in concrete. Now, one of Welch's former girlfriends said that she lived with him in the months following the murders and disappearances. Welch plastered pictures of the girls' missing poster all over his walls. The same girlfriend also said that she discovered some Polaroids that Welch had. He was in prison for a few months for beating on her. During that time, she found the pictures in a leather briefcase. She was positive that the girls in the Polaroids were the same girls on the missing posters. In the photos, the girls were bound and gagged on a bed, and she recognized that bed as being the one that they shared in their bedroom. She threw the photos in the trunk of an abandoned car on the property and fled the scene. When Welch got out of jail, he called the girlfriend demanding to know where the photos were. He said that he knew she had seen them. He also supposedly told her that if she ever told or showed anyone, that she would end up in a pit like those two girls. The same girlfriend heard conversations of three men saying that the victims owed them money. Someone else came forward and said that Welch and Pennington tried to show him the pictures years after the crime. He said they forced the pictures onto him, saying, "Look," like they're proud of them. Another person claims they walked in on the three men looking at the pictures, but they quickly tried to hide them as soon as the person walked in, and multiple witnesses heard the men brag about raping and murdering the girls. The case had a break in February of 2017. A box of documents relative to the case were found in the department. The team who was currently in charge of the case allowed investigators to find and interview new witnesses. Many of these witnesses told the story of two private detectives who worked the case in earlier days. The current investigators were able to track down one of these two investigators. Unfortunately, though, this person no longer had files related to this case, but he did have something that could be helpful to them. He had the insurance card of a woman who lived with Welch at the time of the murders. She often drove his car. That card linked him to the crime scene. In April of 2018, Dean Busick, who I mentioned earlier, was charged with four counts of first-degree murder for the deaths of Bible and the Freeman family. Welch and Pennington were already deceased at that time and could not be charged. The man charged with murder and the two other men mentioned but now deceased were all names we had heard for years from tips, the Bible family wrote on their Facebook page. They also said that the Polaroids mentioned is something that they'd also known about for years. None of that information was new to them, but seeing it on paper did help to make it real for them. At that time, they were only focused on finding Loria and Ashley. They were welcoming any information about their whereabouts, and until the girls were brought home, that it would never be over for the family. In prison, Busick did ask to speak with the Bible family. Loria's mother did confirm that she'd spoken with Busick, but he denied knowing where her daughter's remains were. On July 15th of 2020, Busick pled guilty to accessory to first-degree murder in the deaths of Kathy and Danny Freeman, the arson of their home, and the suspected killing of the two girls, as well as for their abduction. He acknowledged that he had withheld information about the involvement of the other two men. He was sentenced to only 15 years for his crimes, only 10 of which would be mandatory to spend in lockup. While this very sad case came to a very sad and disappointing end, I guess there is a little comfort in knowing that somebody who had something to do with this is at least serving a little bit of time, even though it's definitely not as much as he deserves. And the girls definitely do deserve to be brought home so that the Bible family can have the closure that it needs. But that is the story of the Freeman Bible disappearance. Thanks for kicking it with me tonight. Hope you have a great week, and we'll catch you next time.